Right. We are left off talking about Moses last time, and I do appreciate Ted filling in and I understand from several different people he had a really excellent class and had some kind of a card of information that he passed out. I have yet to get one of those, so I got to pursue him and see about that. But I do appreciate that very much. Last time we started looking at Moses in the section here on Egyptian bondage, and we were looking at how the Israelites ended up in Egypt, and then them eventually becoming a nation of people as the family grew. We have the 12 sons of Israel becoming the 12 tribes of Israel, and they were in while they're in Egypt, we have a turnover of power because the Pharaoh dies, Joseph has died, and then sometime later, the Pharaoh that is at there in charge of the country doesn't know who Joseph is. In other words, they've kind of forgotten all that Joseph had done for them. They're concerned about the growth of the Israelite people as a nation. They're just becoming too numerous, and so they put the Israelites into bondage, into slavery, and they were there for about 400 years. And we talked last time about, you know, after this time that Moses was born, that God through His plan, Moses was born through and was raised up in Pharaoh's house, kills the Egyptian slave driver, flees from Egypt, is out in the land of Midian. Does anybody recall how old was Moses when he fled from Egypt? He's 40 years old. How old is he when he encounters the burning bush? It's 40 years later, so he's 80 years old. How long do the Israelites wander in the wilderness? For 40 years, and Moses was not allowed to enter. So how old was Moses when he died? 120 years old. He lived quite a long time. Now, I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Abraham, mentioned to you the idea of, you know, three people that are like the E.F. Huttons of the Bible. Do y'all recall us talking about that? We talked about that when these three names are mentioned, you know, especially in Jesus' day when he was, you know, walking about the earth and he's discussing things with the Israelite people, especially the leadership, and one of these three names would come up, then that got people's attention. Okay? And those three names, the first one we already talked about was Abraham, who was referred to as father. Abraham was our father. And so whenever you mention Abraham's name, you know, people's ears perked up, and what are you saying about Father Abraham kind of a thing. The second one in that group is Moses. Okay? Moses was considered to be the lawgiver. Okay? And so when you're talking about the law, you see, with the Israelites, then it was Moses said this, Moses gave us this command, and so forth, because Moses was considered to be the lawgiver of the Israelite people. So we're looking at Moses now, and we, you know, Moses goes back to Egypt to free the Israelite people by God's command. And, you know, we talked about the last time we were finishing up with looking at the plagues, and the last plague being what? Okay, the death of the firstborn, which included what major event? The Passover, okay? So, you know, God gave them instructions on, you know, what they were to do to put this this meal together, this Passover meal, and the preparations that were to be made, what they were to include in this meal, the lamb, what they were to do with the lamb, how they were to cook it, but most importantly, what they were to do with the blood. Okay? And they were to put the blood on the doorpost, and any home that had the blood on the doorpost would be passed over, and no death would come to that home. But any home that did not have the blood on the doorpost, the death of the firstborn would be upon that household. So upon that, even Pharaoh's home was not spared, and Pharaoh's firstborn son died. And after that is when Pharaoh decided, okay, it's fine, you know, get Moses, tell him to get his people out of here, leave my country, and so forth. So the Israelites are free to leave. They, in a sense, they kind of ransack Egypt, so to speak, and they collect all kinds of, you know, wealth and treasure from the Egyptian people, and so forth, which later will be used as items to be donated to build the tabernacle in the wilderness. But they, you know, they flee from Egypt, okay? And I want you to turn over in chapter 14 of Exodus, because we're looking in this section, bottom of your page there, your study guide, leaving Egypt, okay? Here's the main things that we want to focus on under this particular category. Charlene, you don't have a copy of this, do you? Let me get you. You got one? Okay. All right. We're on the bottom of the first page there. You see where it says leaving Egypt? Flip it over. All right. So they come to the Red Sea. I want you to notice a couple of things that the scriptures tell us about this event, okay? You look in chapter 14 beginning in the first verse there. The Lord says to Moses, tell the people of Israel to turn back and encamp in front of, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name of that, between Migdol and the sea. He says, you shall encamp facing it by the sea. And look at verse 3. For Pharaoh will say to the people of Israel, or say of the people of Israel, they are wandering in the land. The wilderness has shut them in, and he says, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. Okay? So, what's going on here? Do what? All right, God's telling them what to do, but what does he say here? I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. Okay? And he's going to pursue them. He says, as you continue reading on, I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, and the Egyptians, and here's the reason why he does this, the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord. Okay? God is demonstrating his power, okay, so that the Egyptian people will know and understand who's in charge of the world. Okay? So we know the story. They encamp there. Pharaoh, if you keep on reading down, Pharaoh changes his mind about letting the Israelites go and decides to chase after them, right? The Israelites, their situation is, here they are on the banks of the Red Sea. They look up and they see this cloud of dust that's coming in the distance. They realize that it's Pharaoh's army that is pursuing them. And what do they do? Yeah, panic and despair. So much so, look at verse 12. Is this not what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Okay? So, you know, they've just left. Okay? They've just been freed from this bondage in Egypt. And the first sign of trouble that comes along, what do? They grumble and complain. And not only do they grumble and complain, but how are they grumbling? What is it that they're saying about this whole situation? Yeah, we were better off back there. See, we were better off back there. Now, why is that statement so significant to us today? Okay.
We their God, they can see him and right. blame him for his sin.
All right.
Yeah. Well, it's instructive to us, I guess, to draw a parallel, and that's even done between the Egyptian bondage and the bondage of sin.
Exactly.
You know, and human nature is, you know, okay, I'm going to leave sin, I'm going to live a Christian life. Oh, all of a sudden something happens, I lose a friend or two. Why did I do this? Why don't I just go back to being a sinner? You know, I was better off back there. Mm-hmm. That was more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, Kent, go ahead.
Well, it's just to take that just a little deeper. How can our people, have witnessed the 10 plagues and parting of the Red Sea, how can they go across the other side in the
and do can want to go back? Okay. How is it that a person can, you know, have God work out some major issues and problems in their life, and they give their life to God today, and then the first time trouble comes up, they turn away from Him?
I'm thinking more specifically in that time, in that day, for you to be there. You're there yourself. How can people do that?
Well, if you go back and you look, and this is the beginning of, you know, the story of the Israelite people as a nation, and their tendency over and over again is to do what? Yeah, they stray away from God. And all of the things that God continued to do for them as a nation, and He continued to show them that He would take care of them and called upon them to just put their faith in Him and obey Him, and yet over and over and over again through their history, they continued to turn away from God. It is the nature of people.
Okay. On a lesser point, it's like when you've helped someone over a period of time through their life, and then you can't help them in a certain situation, and they forget all the times you've helped them. They say, "What can you do for me today? I know you did this for me then. But what can you do for me today?" There's always, I forgot about all those things you've done for me. I need something right now. What are you going to do for me today?
This
is an exaggeration of that, but We tend to have that attitude. What can you do for me? I know you helped me in the past, but what are you going to do for me right now?
How quickly we forget, you know. And, you know, if you go and you look at, you know, when Jesus tells the parable of the sower, okay, and He talks about the seed, you know, the sower goes out and he sows the seed, and, you know, and it falls on different types of soil. What is it that He says? You know? Yeah, it's the worries of life that come up and chokes it away. You see that, you know, people say, "Yes, I believe and I'm going to follow the Lord," and they call upon Him and they put their faith in Him. But then, you know, life happens. You know, and when life happens, our nature is go into self-preservation mode that excludes God out of there. When we're thinking carnally instead of spiritually, that's what's going to happen. And that's what this is where, as a nation, it began with Israel. You see how quickly they had forgotten all of the things that God had already done for them. You see. And here they are. And this is the reason why, and you've heard me talk about it so many times, and I keep mentioning it over and over again, why I refer to this particular thing as the Red Sea event, and how we have our own Red Sea events in our lives, don't we? You see? And they're different for everybody, you know, but they are the events that occur in our life that bring us to that point where we're, like the Israelites, we're standing on the banks of the Red Sea, and there's no way to go forward that we can see, and behind us is nothing but despair. You see, whatever the circumstance is, that's our Red Sea events, you see, that we face in life. And the question is that we have to ask ourselves, You know, as we go back, and this is again why these events are so important for us to understand and be able to share with other people that we deal with in our lives, to be able to help them to see, look, what you're going through right now in your life, whether it's your marriage or with your children or your boss or whatever it is you're going through in life, it's a Red Sea event. You see? And we can use this to help people to see what God can do if you'll just trust in Him. Notice, hang with me 1 second, Dolores. I want you to look at Moses' response in verse 13 here. Okay? Moses said to the people, "Fear not, stand firm and see what? The salvation of the Lord, which He will work for you today." You see, that is a message that we need to have in our hearts and minds, and a message that we need to share with other people. You see? We've got to be able to see the salvation of the Lord. What's the problem? Moses is telling them that, and what is the big problem here? Okay. Okay. All right.
I think we find that all the time in our life.
Exactly.
We start worrying about looking. We were talking about this in class. We start looking at people and we think, you know, I can't be like them. So they want to try to be like them, and you take your eyes off of
him. Take your eyes off of him. Dolores, what were you going to say a moment ago? Okay. Okay, all right. If you look at this situation, what were the Israelites not seeing at that point? What were they not seeing? They saw the sea in front of them. They saw the Egyptian army coming behind them. What were they not seeing? Okay, the power of God, but I need something more specific than that. The thing that we continue to trip over ourselves and we fail to see, and this is the thing that discourages us. What did they not see?
They didn't wait for God to deliver them if they wanted to do it themselves.
Okay, you're going there. It's one word.
They had no vision.
Okay, so what did they not see because they had no vision? Yeah, but what did they specifically not see? They didn't see the solution to the problem. You see? And isn't that what causes us to fear? We get hopeless because we don't see how this situation is ever going to be worked out. How is it ever going to be fixed? How is it ever going to work out in my favor here? You see? We stop looking at God and we're looking at the situation, we're looking at the physical, we're looking with these eyes, and we don't see a solution. You see? And that's what their problem was. And I've said this many times before as we've talked about the Red Sea event. When you look at that whole situation, who in their wildest imagination would have thunk to part the sea and let them cross on dry ground? Who would have come up with that? You see, that solution wasn't on anybody's radar screen, you see, as we talk about today. You see, that was like, you know, nobody would have thought of that. And isn't that so much like us today? Sometimes the solutions that God has, you know, we never thought of. It's not on our radar screen, you see. You know, as I've said before, I can just imagine the Israelites, you're standing there and, you know, the Egyptians are getting closer and they're going, okay, all right, Moses, you know, you're saying trust in the Lord and see His salvation. Where's the wood that we need to build a bridge across this sea? How are we going to do this? How is this going to work out? That must have been the major question on everybody's mind. How is this going to work out in a good way for us? Because it doesn't look good right now. See, That is a situation. This is the reason I keep coming back to this over and over again. That situation for the Israelite people as a nation has got to be one of the most hopeless feelings and situations that there ever has been. You see? That because, look, we know what's going to happen. You know, when the army gets here, they're going to kill a good many of us, and those who don't get killed are going to be where? Back in slavery again. That's the only two alternatives here. And how exciting are those alternatives? You see, that situation, as far as they were concerned, was hopeless. There was no real solution that they could see. The reason they couldn't see it is because they were looking with these eyes. But it's all about the solution. And isn't that what causes us so much despair in our Red Sea events? We don't see how it's going to work out. If I could just see, if I could just know that it's going to work out this way. How many times have you ever thought of it? If I could just know that God was going to work it out, you know, and everything was going to be okay, I'd feel a whole lot better about it. You see? And yet we feel so much despair because we don't see a solution to it. We don't see how it's going to work out. But that's what requires our faith. That's what requires us to just as Moses said, fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord. Okay? Ray? Exactly.
You know, they couldn't reach him. So that gave God the opportunity to use Moses to open the Red Sea and they would go on dry land.
Yeah.
And after all day, and after they were all clear, I'm sure they would have had to speed up a bit. But that was okay.
Yeah.
He then, as the armies were going after him, he had to be closed.
The Apostle Paul says that our God can do what? Immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine. See? And this is a perfect example of that. Steve and then Kent over here.
It's interesting, verse 14, that Moses actually, you know, shouts out to the people, says to them, you know, the Lord will fight
for you. Yeah, that's where I was getting ready to go here, yes.
Still.
Yeah.
And we so often, you know, it's like, what am I going to do? Oh, my God, she got this crazy. What, how am I going to fix it? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And we need to learn how to just be still and say, I don't know, Lord, what I'm going to do. I don't know what you're going to do, but I believe you'll do it.
Yeah. When we look at this situation in our Red Sea events, okay, and we put that whole thing together with what we've talked about time and time and time again about spiritual warfare, okay, you can see how important that statement is. Okay? The Lord will fight for you. Okay? The Lord will fight for you. We've got to put our faith in Him. We've got to rely on Him. Time and time again, God demonstrates His power in our lives, doesn't He, Kent? And yet, time and time again, how often do we find ourselves in despair because we can't see the solution to this problem? Okay? And when the same message that God gave to the Israelites then through Moses is the same message you and I need to have constantly ringing in our ear. Stand still and see the power of God. Okay, Kent?
And just to take us back just a moment, that still blows me completely away. I need you just to bear with me a moment. Go back in time.
These are real people. Mm-hmm. I think everybody here knows this.
Absolutely.
These are real people. Could you, have crossed the Red Sea and turned and say today, I don't think it's the first any of you, because I believe every one of you is called to God. It's the first any that could deny Christ and not be looking to God and on your knees praying. But why were these people not? And this is my take of it, and just some discussion when it comes to this, but the Spirit of God did not indwell those people. He only indwell those that God sent the Spirit. Moses was in contact with God. Without the Spirit and God speaking to him, Moses would have been just as they were. God was speaking to him. He did all the miracles. And wow, these people still didn't believe. What's up with that? Today, this God has sent the Spirit that dwells in us. And that's what convicts us. But the lies of the world just keep filling all of us. When you step outside these doors, and boy, I find myself falling away. And as there is the event coming, but until I stop a moment and say, what matters? God's sovereign. He's got it all. Mm-hmm. The Spirit of God is in each and every one that are called to him. And those that don't seem to have it, just keep praying for them because it's available. And I just thought I would just share.
Well, I think you're right. But even with the Spirit within us, we still face this same thing, and we still struggle with it. But we've got to look. We've always got to be focusing on and asking, what is God's solution to this? Yeah.
Well, here's something to think about. We ponder in this atmosphere, this church atmosphere, of how when Jesus was crucified, and Pilate asked him, "What do you want to do?" And they said, "Crucify him, crucify him." And he said, "Well, I can never do that. You know that never." I saw some of the miracles he's done, and I know he's a good, but we said, we could never do that. But I tell you, every time we deliberately sin, we say, crucify him.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Well, it is. It's really easy for us to look, and we've got to be so careful. We look at these stories in the Bible, and it's easy for us to go, how stupid can you be? You know, whether you're talking about the Israelites, you know, in these circumstances and as they wandered in the wilderness, or you look at the disciples that are following Jesus and he's getting ready to go to heaven and they're going, Lord, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom to Israel? It's like, are you guys so stupid you couldn't see what he's talking about? No. And yet today we have the whole story. We have the whole picture here. And you're right. How often do we miss it? How often do we despair? You see, when we're faced with our Red Sea events, you know, and I suggest to you that we are without excuse. You see? They didn't have the whole story. They had their part of it. It was the story was being written while they're doing it, you see? We've got the advantage of having the whole story from the beginning all the way to the end, including the return, the second coming, and what that's going to be like. And yet, when we face our Red Sea events in our lives, what do? We do the same thing they did. We don't see the solution, and at least a solution that's favorable to us, you see. And so we begin to feel hopeless and we despair. Well,
about, you know, a minute into the future. And in this minute,
it doesn't look good.
Right.
In the next minute, it doesn't look too good either. So we need to go to the one who is able to control it all
yeah.
and say, hey, I don't know how you can fix it. I need you to fix it.
And you know, how many times in our lives, you know, whether it be individually, personally, or collectively as a church, how many times have we faced different situations that, you know, would be categorized as a Red Sea event, and yet God, you know, worked out the solution and so forth, and yet again, then the next time we come to the Red Sea, then we're doing the same thing. I want y'all to look over here on this side. Everybody look over on this side of the room at the wall over here. And what do we have over there? Those are our prayer requests, right? And a lot of those represent Red Sea events, don't they? Okay, now I want everybody to look over on this side of the wall. See, and what is this over here? Yeah. See, that's God's solution. Some of which, as we've talked about in here many, many times, some of which, you know, in our wildest imagination, didn't think that God would work that situation out the way He did. See, and so is God still taking care of Red Sea events today? Absolutely. Absolutely. See? Now, there's one other thing about this particular event, and then we're going to move on, that I want you to focus on here. This is very significant in my opinion, but I think sometimes we miss this part of it. Okay? You know, when the point came, when you know, the Israelites were convinced and, you know, Moses raised his staff and the Red Sea parted and the people began to cross over the Red Sea, they took a step into the sea, and all of a sudden they got bogged down in the mud, and it took a long time for them to cross over into that, because, you know, they're getting sloshing around in that mud, and the wheels are getting stuck in the mud, and, you know, and how long does it take? For you ever walked in mud before, you know? Why are y'all laughing? They crossed over on what? On dry ground, you see? And that may seem like a real insignificant thing, but to me it's not. You see? I mean, it's one thing, okay, well, he parted the sea and he made a path for them. But what kind of path was it? It was dry ground. The bottom of the sea became dry. You see? The bottom of the sea became dry. Does God take care of not only providing a solution, but the best solution, and He makes, if we just follow Him, you see, He makes the path, the right path, and it's the best path. You see? And I believe if we take the path that God provides, it's the easiest way. It may not always seem that, but it's the easiest way. Why? Because just like John the Baptist talked about Jesus in coming, when he was proclaiming the coming of the Lord, what did he say? He's going to make the crooked paths straight. You see? And that's what God does for us. You see? He straightens out those paths, and he makes them so that we can cross in the direction he wants us to go. Okay? And that's what he did for them. So that seemingly insignificant part of it, that they crossed over on dry ground, it's easy to miss that. But don't. Don't miss it, because it's significant. God doesn't provide half a solution to things. Okay? God provides the whole solution. And the whole solution they needed was a way to get to the other side, and that wasn't going to happen if they were going to get stuck in the mud. And so God provided not only the parting of the water, but the dry ground for them to travel on to get to the other side. Okay? Steve, comment?
Well, I read something not too long ago, and I can't remember where, but it's already been mentioned in class. You're talking to Israelites, you're talking probably 1.5 million people. And, of course, you know, as kids, you know, and we've even done it here, we do the parting of the Red Sea, and we see this 20-foot wide gap. You know, to get 1.5 million people across a body of water overnight, you've got to have a hole that will hold 5,000 people walking side by side. That's just how many. So I think we tend to miss the magnitude of this. You know, the parting was not just a little pathway. It was a huge, dry, monstrous gap.
Nice.
Okay, and what had been a sea And we also tend to leave out that the Lord was there, you know, with the pillar of cloud and pillar of fire.
Right, yeah.
Which, you know, does beg the question, well, there the pillar of cloud and fire was, they've been following it. And yet they're wondering, what are we going to do? You know, and there's the evidence of the Lord standing, you know,
right there in front of them. Yeah.
Okay. And he, you know, watched over, you know, and then, you know, when it looked like Israel might or Egypt might catch up, he throws the army into confusion. Mm-hmm. The wheels of the chariots fall off. Okay. Yep. Well, you know, here's another miracle, right? You know, they can't go anywhere. But yes, this was a rather gigantic, okay, event. You know, it was unbelievably big.
Oh yeah.
And its magnitude. Yeah.
And Hollywood tried, but it didn't even come close to, you know, trying to show how that must have been. But you know, the thing about it is we look at this story, and this is a perfect example of what we've been talking about, and how significant this story is to us in our lives today. So we have a story. It's not just a Bible story to tell the people, and this is something that we've got to understand. This isn't just an ancient story to tell people so that they understand the facts. This is something to help us to understand how, as we face our Red Sea events today in our lives, and as the people that we work with, our family members, our neighbors, whoever it is, as they're facing Red Sea events in their lives, this becomes our story. At least it should. You see? And that's what brings it from being this story, you know, of something that happened, you know, thousands of years ago, and yeah, it's a great read and it makes a great movie, to being, no, this is personal. You see? This is about my life right now in the Red Sea event that I'm facing in my life right now at this time. And it's to help me to be able to trust in God and allow Him to provide His solution to whatever I'm facing in my life. And that's a powerful message that we have to share with people today. Okay? And that's one of the reasons why I spend so much time on this particular thing. Because this is one of the, it's one of the key events in all of the Scriptures. And I think the reason that it is, or at least the reason I believe it is because, again, it's something that you and I can relate to in our lives over and over again. How many times, just think, how many times have you personally or have you known somebody, a friend, a family member, a coworker, somebody that has faced or is facing right now a Red Sea event in their life? You know, one of those events that you know, you look at the situation and it's just hopeless. You can't see a solution to it at all, you see, and you feel despair. How many times that happened in your life, you see? And the message is the same for us today that it was for them, you see? God will fight that fight for you. Stand back, be still, and see the power of the Lord. Colonel?
One of the things we have to remember, you know, sometimes we go around the word miracle, and we don't understand the magnitude of it. When God works a miracle, He suspends the laws of nature. Mm-hmm. The laws of physics are turned upside down and thrown their head. Seas do not part. Okay? They don't do that. You know, people do not walk on water. Pillars of fire that doesn't happen. So the God who is able to just creatively manipulate nature in favor of His children, that's the same God that can do it. And so you got to think, He was able to part the Red Sea. He could probably put it up there, but you know what? He's an awesome God is one of the biggest understatements we can say, but I mean that's all.
What other word do we have to describe?
He's more than awesome. He's just out of this world. Just because you don't see it doesn't mean He's not seeing it. As a matter of fact, the fact that you don't see it makes it even more certain that it's the solution. Because if you can figure it out on your own, then it's not an area where you can't recognize or see. When you can't figure it out and you can't see it, that's when you know.
Yeah.
God's going to, like they say, show up and show up.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, you're right. And ultimately, the message over and over again that God brings to his people over and over and over through all these kind of things is what? What does God want us to know and understand? Ultimately, we need him. We have to learn to depend upon him. That's what he wants us to know. You see? Because if you think about it this way, if we could work it out on our own, why would we need God? You see? Well, what would we need him for? You see? And that is the point. We can't work it out on our own. We can't even work out these kinds of problems that we face in our lives. And ultimately, the most important thing that we can't work out on our own is what? Our sin problem, you see? And that's the message over and over again of the Bible. It's from beginning to end. That's the message. God's saying, I want you to learn to depend upon me. You see? And that's what we've got to do. We've got to stop depending on ourselves and thinking we can handle things. Because God, over and over again, he allowed people to be in situations that were so overwhelming, they couldn't handle it on their own. I mean, you throw somebody into a fiery pit, a fiery furnace that's been heated up, so hot that those standing around it are burned up. You're going to throw them in there. How are you going to work that out on your own? They ain't no working that out on your own. You're going to be a crispy critter in about that long, right? Okay? But yet, God worked that out, didn't he? Again, you throw somebody into a den of hungry lions they hadn't eaten in a little while, and they like the taste of human flesh. How are you going to work that out on your own? Nice kitty. See how long that's going to work for you. You see? But the point of all these stories that God gives to us is to show us, number one, we can't work it out on our own, and number two, he can, thank you. You see? And that's the point. When we're faced with those Red Sea events in our lives, to learn and to know, I can't do anything with this. I cannot make this work. But he can. I don't know what the solution to this is. I don't see a solution. But God has one. Last thought on this before we finish up. When it comes to that solution, you've always got to remember, it may not be the solution we want. Okay? And I think that's the part that we oftentimes have a problem with. You see, it may not be the solution we want, but it will be God's solution. And he will, as you mentioned earlier, Colonel, he will, and we've talked about this before, work it out in our best interest. Why do I know that? Because God is, somebody help me.
Love.
Thank you. God is love. And love, agape, has our best interest in mind, doesn't it? That's how we know that whatever the solution is, it may not be what we want, but it will be for our best interest. All right? Thank you all very much. We will continue looking at